Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown Preakness Preview conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star one to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Alicia Hughes. Please go ahead, Mrs. Hughes.
Thank you, Adele, and welcome everyone to this week's NTRA teleconference on this year's Road to the Triple Crown. This week, we have three scheduled guests to catch up with in advance of the second leg of the Triple Crown, the $1.5 million Preakness Stakes taking place on May 18th at Pimlico Racecourse, a race that figures to be a wide-open affair as the top four horses across the line in the Kentucky Derby are all sitting this one out. You can't have a Preakness Stakes without having someone mention the phrase new shooters, and indeed we've got a handful of live horses slated to start in Baltimore who did not contest the first classic. One of those trying to put his fresher legs to good use is Bourbon War, runner-up in the Fountain of Youth Stakes and most recently fourth in the Florida Derby. Bourbon War is trained by Mark Hennig, who will be seeking his first classic win should his charge pull off the upset next Saturday. Mark, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Alicia.
First and foremost, I saw that Bourbon War worked yesterday in company and that he worked with blinkers again, and I understand that the plan is going to be for him to wear the blinkers in the Preakness. Is that correct?
That is the plan, yes. It's just they're very minimal blinkers, but we just kind of – I tried wheezing them in them down at Gulfstream, and I thought we got a good reaction to him, and I've used him subsequently to gallop occasionally and then in the breezes. So I think that they'll have a positive effect on him.
I was going to say, is the plan for him potentially, especially with that additional equipment, is the plan for him to maybe show some more speed?
Well, I guess that could be a side effect. I think our biggest concern kind of was that he'd be a little closer, maybe turning for home and be a little less distracted turning for home. He just kind of looked like he got out of his rhythm in the Florida Derby a little bit, and even in the Fountain of Youth when he kind of swung wide and took a minute to switch leads. I think had he transitioned a little better in that turn, he might have been even closer to Cody Lawner in the Fountain of Youth.
And with him, was the plan always to kind of point for the Preakness when it became clear that the Derby wasn't going to happen, or did all of the fallout that we've seen from the Derby, did that help make your guys' decision to go ahead in this spot?
Well, it definitely helped us make the decision, but we were open to the Peter Pan or the Preakness through the running of the Derby and the subsequent days after. We had a conference call. I think everybody involved's confidence swelled a little bit with the result of the Derby, and then later getting information that a lot of those still weren't going to move forward to the second leg made it even more encouraging.
Sounds good, Mark. I said, looks like we've got a lot of media on the line. So with that, I will throw it back to our operator, and we will check in with the media to see if they have any questions for you.
Okay.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, you may press star 1 if you wish to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Thank you. We will now take our first question from Stephen Wino, Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Mark, thank you very much for doing this.
You bet.
To follow up on Alicia's question, obviously, when you don't have a Triple Crown winner on the line, a lot of people outside horse racing maybe might think there's less excitement. But as a trainer, not having the potential Derby, not having the Derby winner in there, how much more wide open does that make this race for you?
Well, it I think not having the Derby winner or the horse to finish first or even, Code of Honor in there makes a big difference, from a competitive standpoint. But I think there's a lot of fresh faces in there that, you know, we've seen years where the Preakness yielded the better part of the three-year-old class than the Derby, and you never know till the smoke clears how that year is going to shake out. I mean, the Derby is the most recognized race in America for the casual fan or the non-fan at all, for that matter. But, you know, I think true horse racing fans know that you know, the best three-year-olds come from these races, whether they ran in the Derby, they ran in the Preakness, or they didn't run till the Belmont. So, you know, a lot can happen as the year goes on and these horses mature at different rates.
To follow up on that, just how tight do you expect the competition to be at the Preakness, despite not having those top four horses from the Derby there?
How what? What about the conversation?
How tight do you expect the competition to be? Obviously, Improbable will be there. War of Will will be there. Your horse, obviously, Rivermore will be there. How high a level of quality of horse is there still in this race?
Oh, I think it's an excellent, you know, War of Will without any impediment would be tough. Improbable had a bit of a rough trip. And some of the new shoes, I was very impressed with Owendale's effort in the Lexington. Always Mining's been on a tear. You know, there's some fresh faces that could have a lot to say in this division before the year's over.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Danny Brewer at Horse Racing School. Please go ahead.
Mark, how are you?
Good, Danny.
So when we talk about the final furlong in the Fountain of Youth, man, he made up ground. That was the Bourbon War was probably as good as some Tennessee whiskey right there. What's your thoughts on that, and what did that tell you about your horse?
Well, visually, it was very impressive the way he closed in that last 16th, especially. It told me, the last furlong told me a lot. Told me the wire came up a little too soon for us with that first run into the first wire at Gulfstream that day. But it also, you know, that was kind of watching the replays of that and seeing him come off the turn and maybe just taking a little longer than we wanted for him to transition to his right lead and finish up. Yeah, you know, he really dropped down and finished the last 16th, but it would have been nice if he had gotten that run started just a little sooner. So that's probably what's our biggest takeaway, was that there was still room for improvement.
You know, Elise, you touched on as far as the blinkers and adding the speed. So, you know, not to ask you to divulge your game plan completely, but obviously you want him to be closer to the pace and then cut loose with a run like that, right?
Well, we have no intention of trying to be part of the pace. I don't think anybody's got that in mind. It's just that you'd like them to be a little more focused. And, you know, by being focused, I think having him on the bridle is more important than, you know, somebody's there ready when the jock asks him, rather than, you know, taking a little while to get that run started. So I don't know that it puts us that much closer to the pace as much as it puts us that much more in the game.
More in the game. Okay, all right, great, fantastic. Appreciate your time. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just another moment to allow anyone else an opportunity to signal for questions. Thank you. We will take our next question from Tom Padula at America's Best Racing.
Hey, Mark. I wanted to ask
yes,
you,
sir,
about the layoff between the Florida Derby and the Preakness. Is it less than ideal for you, the time between races?
I would qualify more as ideal. I'm really excited about the 7 weeks between races. I think it benefited him when we left New York for the Remsen and moved to Florida, and he had 7 weeks to prepare to come back in that allowance race at Gulfstream. I think he was keener. He was on the bridle. He fought his way through traffic that day. Granted, it was just an allowance race, but, you know, Cutting Humor was in there. It was a solid group of horses anyway, and I thought that he's a horse that would do well on rest all the time because he's still a horse that's developing. So I like the 7 weeks between races, I think it should work out well for him.
Okay, just if I may, was there anything that worked against the Peter Pan?
Worked against the decision to go there?
You know, in other words, you were thinking Peter Pan. Is there anything that said, here's why we don't want the Peter Pan direction?
No, I mean, it was the reason we chose the Preakness over the Peter Pan was, you know, $1.2 million in purses and, you know, the prestige of obviously the Preakness Stakes and having the opportunity to run in a Triple Crown race. I think after watching the Derby and seeing Code of Honor, Maximum Security run so well, we just felt like the horse was deserving and worthy of a start in a Triple Crown race. And, yeah, we could run in the Peter Pan and wait around and hope to have a shot in the Belmont. But as we saw Derby week, things happen that prevent horses from making a race, and he's doing well. Why not seize the opportunity when we can?
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Louisa Barton, the host talk show on the Sky 97.3. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for being with us today. My question is, do you think that the combination of Improbable and Mike Smith is going to be the tough one to beat in this race?
Well, you know, Baffert and Smith are always highly thought of. They were the favorite in the Derby, I believe, or Improbable was without Mike Smith. So I think, you know, Mike adds a lot to the game. I think I'm happy to have Irad riding our horse because nobody could be more familiar with Improbable than him at this point. You know, I think he certainly always got to be respected, those two, as a combo especially.
Thank you, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It appears there are no more questions at this time, so I'd like to hand it back to Ms. Alicia Hughes. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Mark, I know you've got some horses in today, so we won't keep you long. I just wanted to ask you real quick, though, about Strike Power, who made a big return last month to the winner's circle. How is he doing, and is the True North still the plan for him?
Yeah, he's doing great. He had a nice breeze yesterday, and he came out of it really well, and he just seems like that win really helped him bloom since he's gotten back up to Belmont. He seems like he's really training aggressively, and we are at this point looking forward to the True North. That looks like the plan, and I think Johnny Velasquez will probably ride him there.
Perfect. Sounds good. Well, again, I said, Mark, I know things are busy, so I just want to thank you again for taking the time out to come on and speak with our media today, and I look forward to seeing you in Baltimore in a handful of days.
Well, thank you very much, and enjoyed it, and always happy to help. See you down there.
Thanks again, Mark. Continued best of luck with everything.
All right. Thank you.
And next up, we are going to check in with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, who is slated, as we just heard, to have mount aboard Grade 1 winner Improbable in the Preakness Stakes. Improbable crossed the wire fifth, but was elevated to fourth in the Kentucky Derby via DQ, while Smith guided Cutting Humor to a 10th place finish in the race that day. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you again. I said, as much of a roller coaster as the Derby result was, I know you yourself had already been through the ringer that week when your mount and morning line favorite, Omaha Beach, had to scratch. When you look back at just how the Derby set up and how the track was playing in the sloppy conditions that day, is it hard for you not to think about what might have been had Omaha Beach been in there?
Yeah, I mean, you think about you know, you look at the way the race shaped up and where you think you would have been, and you know, we all certainly know that he really, really loves the you know, a sloppy racetrack. He's run extremely well over it, I think, in three different occasions, or at least two. So, yeah, I'd love to have gotten the opportunity for me and Mr. Porter and especially Mr. Mandela as well, would have been awesome to have had that chance, but it is what it is. I mean, it's racing, and that's just the way it goes.
And obviously, I said you've not been on Improbable, but you've certainly ridden against him, you know, especially in Arkansas. What has just been your impressions of him, or what has Bob maybe told you about him, and how much upside do you think he still has?
Well, I certainly think that we haven't seen his best race yet, although he showed signs of brilliance at different times. You know, if I can just get on him for the first time, which sometimes really works well for me, and get him to run one of those AEA plus races, he's not without a huge chance of you know, winning the whole thing.
I think Bob was actually quoted on TVG the other day as saying that he originally wanted you, or was hoping to try, or was trying to get you on Improbable, you know, it may be his first few starts. How close did you come to riding him previously?
I'm you know, you'd have to talk to Bob exactly about all that, but I mean, there's been talk of it in the past, and just the opportunity never came. I was riding Roadster for Bob at one point, and then when he was coming open in the Arkansas Derby, of course I had Omaha Beach going in. So I've been admiring him from afar, so to say, and sometimes from behind him. Yeah, because he's outrun me a few times, but just happy to have the opportunity. I was talking to Bob yesterday. He said he came out with really good energy. He came out of the race the best of his three, and he wanted to move forward with him, and I was blessed to pick up the mount. So we'll see what happens. We've been very fortunate and done well together, me and Bob, in situations like this, and hopefully this will be another one of them.
Yeah, to say that you guys have had good luck together, that's pretty much the understatement of 2019. So, I said, Mike, like I said, thank you. We're going to go ahead and throw it back to our operator and check in with our media and see if they have any questions for you.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, you may press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for a brief moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Thank you. We will take our first question from David Grenning from the Daily Race Forum. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm great, David. How are you doing?
Good, sir. Mike, could you just talk a little bit about when you had the conversation with Bob and you told him you were going to pick Omaha Beach, were you at all concerned that there would be any repercussions, or did you just, you know, this is my best hope, no offense, Bob, but this is my best hope type of thing?
No, you know, honestly, Bob is really good that way. I mean, he's good on both sides of it, man. If he's having to make a change, well, he's the first one to tell you, and it's nothing personal. He just felt for this race coming up or whatever reason, I need to do this or do that. And he's extremely just the same the other way. If you need to take off one of yours, he totally understands. I've never seen him get upset about it. Matter of fact, he was, before I even had come close to making a decision, he said, listen, you know, we're good no matter what. You know, you make your decision what you think is going to be best for that race. And that's what I did. And he was really, really good about it.
And when you did come open, did you reach out to him just doing your due diligence to say, hey, if you, you know, I know you already hired another jock, but if you want me, I'm here, type of thing?
Not to ride. I did talk to him afterwards to let him know that I was out, but I didn't go after really any horse, period. He certainly didn't offer it to me, and then an hour later I was offered another mount. Going in, it was, you know, they were, I know, when I picked up Cutting Humor, Corey had picked him up last minute as well, so it wasn't like it was costing him, you know, another mount, which, you know, I mean, as far as I know anyway, and you know, the connection we had just coming off a big year, they own part of Justify, and they wanted me to ride, and they're asking me to kind of step in to be a quarterback in the Super Bowl, and I certainly didn't turn it down. but in doing so, I mean, both riders were going to receive the same amount of prize money, whatever I was going to make, he was as well. So
that's a last question. Yeah. Just, is there a different mindset? Last year you're coming to the Preakness with the Derby winner. This year you're that's not the case, but you're still more most likely to have the favorite. Is there a different mindset going into this year than would last year?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not coming off of winning the Derby, of course, and you're not thinking, Triple Crown, because going in, Justify had certainly that kind of ability, and he showed that he could, he could handle the distance, and that, he was heading in, and I felt that if we could pull the Preakness off without having to use him too much, he would be very difficult to beat, at Belmont with a big chance of winning the Triple Crown, whereas this, I'm picking up a horse for a classic, which always is huge, and as far as, going in to win, the mindset's not different. I'm just trying to wait and see who's all going to go in there and where we draw and come up with a game plan that I can get an A-plus race out of this horse, because I know there's a lot in there we haven't seen yet.
Thank you. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Stephen Wino at the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for doing this.
Sure.
Obviously, you've had great horses when you're working with Bob that you've been riding, but what is it about kind of the magic that's worked when it's a Bob trained and Mike Smith ridden horse in Triple Crown?
Well, I mean, first of all, he's just one of the greatest. He'll go down as one of the greatest trainers of all time. And he knows how to get these 3-year-olds right for these kind of races. We have a lot of mutual respect for each other, and when I ride, he lets me ride with a clear mind and no handcuffs. Man, I get to do what I feel is right. As I'm riding a race, I mean, I might call a complete audible, and I know that he's going to be okay. I mean, he might, what was that? And well, this happened, and he understands. I mean, he's not only is he a great trainer, but he's a good coach. He lets me play, lets me do my part. I mean, he's done his part, and he lets me do mine, and it really works together. We have when you can have a good relationship with any trainer you ride for like that, and feel free to do what you feel is right. And you've had the experience, underneath your belt to at least think what you're going to do is right. It really helps a lot.
Sure. How different is this for you? Obviously, not riding the same horse from the Derby to the Preakness, IRAD switching mounts. How different is this knowing horses you've ridden, knowing the horse you're going to go on, and kind of the musical chairs that's going on with this Triple Crown season?
It seems to be a little bit more than maybe most of the time, but this isn't uncommon. This happens, and especially during this Triple Crown stuff. There's a lot of musical chairs. A lot of people picked up horses at the last minute and won the Derby, won the Preakness, and the Belmont, sure, for that matter. So it's not uncommon, and so do other riders. Sometimes the first time you ride one, is the best time. I mean, I have a knack for that sometimes. I don't know what it is. I wish I could. Whatever it is, it seems to work at times really well. So I'm just hoping for one of those again.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Danny Brewer from Horse Racing Scoop. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Doing great, Danny. Thank you.
Hey, when you won the Ali Sheba, afterwards you said, McKenzie was talking to you and you listened to him and that's why you won. When did you start speaking thoroughbred and who was your instructor on that?
Horses talk to you with body language. There is no language, but if you'll just listen to what their body is saying, they're usually telling you something at times. Rather, they're uncomfortable where you have them, or if you're asking them to do too much, or if you're not letting them do enough, for that matter. It's all just body language. And he was just down in there. He was kind of slipping around a little, and he was down inside tight, and he just wasn't happy there. It wasn't his happy place, and I knew that I wasn't done. I know there was, I know this horse and what he's capable of, and he was, he hadn't done enough to been tired or getting tired. And, you know, he did not run very well in the Breeders' Cup. So I'm thinking, you know, let me just give him a chance at this point. And saying that, you know, I just kind of got a hold of him and just kind of backed him out of that situation just to see what he was going to do. And the reason I had confidence doing it again is because I was riding for Bob, and I know that I could explain it to him, and he would understand it. I mean, might not be happy if I won the one, but he would have listened to what I was trying to say. If you watch his body language, you could see it. I mean, if you know horse body language, I felt very confident that I'd be able to get back out again because the horse to my outside was traveling extremely well. So I knew when he turned him loose, he was probably going to open up on the field at some point, and I'd have a place to go forward and out if I need be. If this works, and as soon as I backed him out, you could see him. He jumped back in the bridle. His whole body language changed, and I was loaded. I mean, all I needed was a place to go. And sure enough, when I got that separation where I could ease out, well, you saw what he did. He just turned it on, man. He ran very, very, very good. I think he was only a fifth of a second off the track record.
Oh, very, very impressive. Now, I know that you've been on McKenzie a lot, and you haven't been on Improbable a lot. Is it harder to pick up on that horse language when you haven't been on a horse a lot, or are you experienced enough that you feel like you can kind of read them no matter what?
Yeah, they don't speak a different language, so it's not like it's not like you got to worry about, you know,
not like French or Spanish or anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just the horse body language. They have a universal language, man. They tell you when they're happy, when they're not. Anybody who's around horses could tell you that, and it's just a matter of we're gonna listen to them at times. Believe me, if the horse next to my outside, although my horse was uncomfortable, if he wasn't traveling good where I thought that he would make some room for me, I wouldn't have gotten behind a horse that I didn't think was going to go anywhere, so I'd have probably just kept him there, whether he was happy or not. But in this situation, I felt confident that the horse to my outside at some point was going to kick on, and I would be able to give him some room. So, you know, it's a universal language, and all horses have it, and it's just a matter of listening to it at times, and I don't always do it myself, but this time I went for it, and I thought, man, if this don't work, this ain't going to be good.
Mike, you did a great job there. I'm sure you'll do a great job in the Preakness. Wish you the best of luck, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Marcus Hirsch from the Daily Racing Form. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. I'm wondering, you might have not been able to see it at all, but I'm wondering, did you see the incident that led to the Derby disqualification while you were riding the race?
Not necessarily. I just knew something happened. I didn't know exactly what happened. I was to the outside, and of course that kickback is all over you, man. I was lucky that I could make sure not run into anybody myself. So no, I didn't really get to see it. Although I knew, you certainly know something happened, and next thing you know, we're all get carried out pretty wide. So I knew something happened.
There was a chain reaction, even as far back as you were.
Well, it trickles, a ways back,
Looking, I'm going to guess you've watched the race. If not, then the question is moot, but assuming that you have, from your expert veteran eyes, what did you see happening up on the front end there with the winner that was eventually disqualified?
You know, I don't really have a dog in this fight, and I'd rather just stay out of it, to be honest with you. There's a lot of different scenarios and different things that he could have saw, could have happened, or what happened exactly. You know, I don't really know for a fact. You know, you certainly just don't want to see, of course, that kind of outcome where the race is in somebody's arms, and next thing you know, it's not. But then again, someone gets put up, and like I said, I'm staying kind of out of this. So there's been enough opinions about it, and my little opinion ain't going to matter a whole lot, so I'd rather not talk about it.
That's fair enough. Quick question about Improbable. From speaking to the connections and or watching his races, do you think that that horse kind of struggles on wet tracks at all? I mean, I'm just kind of watching the way he goes, and it's hard to tell from the outside, but I'm just not sure that he loves the mud.
I could agree with you a lot. I've seen him when he's loved something in his body action. There's been a time or two early on when Drayden rode him where, man, he just drew away and he looked like Secretariat running down through the lane, a lot like Justify. Honestly, they even look alike other than their size. And yeah, his body language does change a little bit in the off track. Although he's talented, he's a trier, so he's gonna keep trying. But yeah, I agree. I don't think they're his favorite racetrack, but he certainly will give it a go. I'll tell you that.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next question is from Louisa Barton, the host of Talk Show on the Sky 97.3. Louisa, please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, Louisa. Thank you.
One of Improbable's weapons is definitely his great stride, and he got a little bogged down in the Derby. Seeing how Irad rode him in the Derby, does that kind of help you with your strategy for the Preakness and kind of keeping him more open so that he can use that stride?
Yeah, somewhat. Although I thought Irad did a great job, had him in a really good spot. Actually, I don't think that the mud is his favorite. Depending on the pace, I might do a little something different. You know, depending on how the race is setting up, that I think is going to work. I'm going to really pay a lot of attention to him and see if that works as well on what he's liking and what he's not liking. Because I know if I can get him happy, he's going to run big. I just got to find that place. And where it's at right now, I can't honestly tell you, Louisa. It could be on the lead. It could be sitting dead last. I have no idea yet. It just depends on who all goes in there and where we draw. And then, honestly, I know how I feel that he's doing as the race is developing and where I want to put him. Certainly he's good out of the gate, so, never take away nothing that comes easy. And then go from there,
Wonderful. And you have said, really your entire career, that you love the pressure of the big races. Can you talk about how that makes you really focus?
Yeah. Pressure is a good thing. It could be a really good thing, and I guess it could be a bad thing, depending on how you handle it and what you do with it. I choose to let it slow things down for me and just really just follow what I'm feeling is working really, really good and aggressive at times or even backing out of a spot, whatever it is. When the money's down, I don't know, it takes me to a different place for some odd reason. And I just really, really focus and everything seems to slow down for me a lot. Whatever that is, I don't know. That's just kind of the way I handle it. I've been in situations when I was younger and everything went way too fast for me. So slowing it down works a whole lot better for me.
Well, I'm glad to see you in the Preakness, Mike, and I think it really helps the sport a lot that you're there, because I think a lot of us that were very disappointed with the DQ and everything that happened were like, well, we're not going to go to the Preakness, but now I think a lot of us are, because we're glad to see you back on one of Bob's horses, so we're excited and wish you all the best.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I'm riding a really, really nice horse, man. This horse has a lot of talent, so I'm hoping he'll show up for me.
I hope so, too. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press *1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to allow the opportunity to anyone else to signal for questions. Thank you. We have one question from Tom Padula at America's Best Racing. Tom, please go ahead.
Yes, hi, Mike. Thank you for doing this, Mike. Obviously, you've ridden a long time. I wanted to ask you, with the deaths we've had at Santa Anita and now a controversial Derby, is this one of the tougher times in racing since you've been involved?
I would have to say it is, Tom, but I'm really proud of the people in our industry. We're getting together. We're trying to figure things out, and we're getting stronger and better. And although the Derby was very controversial, it's got a lot of media hype. It still is. A lot of opinions have come around from around the world. I think people are still very, very interested in racing, and as you can see in the ratings, it's still pretty popular, you know, despite the tough year. And people at San Anita are working hard to get everything right, and tracks seems to be doing well. You know, we had a lot of bad weather during that time for a solid 2 months, and, you know, it just played a big part in everything. And, you know, sometimes, you know, good things will come out of, although it's very sad, will come out of a tragic situation. So I think we're doing a good job. We're gonna get through this, and it's going to be big.
Okay, just if I may, one other question. When we asked Mark Cassie why Tyler didn't claim foul, he referred to, you know, riders having friendships. Does that sometimes influence riders and whether they do or do not claim foul?
Not to be moved up from second to first, by no means. I don't care who your friend is. You know, he was probably out of the money and just didn't think it was going to do him a whole lot of good to move up a place. More than likely, it's probably why he didn't claim foul. You'd have to ask him, Tom. I really don't know why he didn't or why he did, but I know if I got bothered and I finished second, I don't care who. If my mother could be riding a horse in front of me, I'm claiming foul on her. But if
okay,
I'm out,
you know,
of the money,
it was more the larger question, Mike.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to. If I'm not.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. It appears there are no more questions at this time, so I'd like to hand it back to Alicia Hughes. Ms. Hughes, please go ahead.
Thank you. Mike, like I said, again, I know, like everybody, things are busy for you, so I want to thank you again for taking the time to come on and share your thoughts and your wisdom with everybody on this call today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Mike, again, thank you so much for your time. We'll see you in a handful of days in Baltimore. Safe travels, and best of luck. Continue the best of luck with everything.
Thank you.
And last but certainly not least, we are going to go to trainer Mark Cassie, who conditions multiple graded stakes winner War of Will. War of Will was elevated to seventh in the Derby via DQ after being interfered with by Maximum Security, but managed to avoid disaster and emerge in good enough order where he's going to march on to Baltimore this coming week. Mark, thank you so much for coming on our call today.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Mark, I know it goes without saying, probably since around the 5/16th mark of the Derby, it's been one emotionally charged moment after another for you this week. And I know that you were very emotional the morning after the Derby in saying how fortunate you felt that you still had your horse in one piece. When did you first get a chance to really watch the replay of the Derby and realize how close things came to being a real disaster out there?
Well, obviously when they were showing the, you know, the replay on the screen is when I really got to see exactly how bad it was. And then, of course, I went later on, probably not maybe a day or two later, and watched the race even closer. I was watching the race with my family and friends in the paddock. So, interesting enough, I don't think Churchill's view of the race, the pan shot, was quite as good. You know, a lot of people got to see a little better shot when they were watching, say, on NBC or something on TV. So I didn't realize how bad we were interfered until after the race was run, you know, and maybe 5-10 minutes later watching the replays while the stewards were making the decision.
And I know there's been a lot of things written, there's been a lot of statements, there's been a lot of finger-pointing since the Derby, and you've been very impassioned in defending both your horse and Tyler. With everything that has kind of transpired, is there any way to put into words just how significant it would be to you if War of Will ends up becoming your first Classic winner next Saturday?
Well, I mean, anybody that knows me and has followed me and has talked to me knows how much I think of War of Will, and I just think he's a great horse. He's been through a lot of adversities and continued to show his class, and it would be wonderful for him to be able to pick up a classic win.
All right, Mark, like I said, I know I'm going to guess that the media on the line probably has some questions for you. So with that, we will throw it back to our operator and see if anybody has any questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, you may press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Thank you. We will take our first question from Marcus Hirsch at the Daily Racing Form. Please go ahead. Just a moment, please.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Marcus.
Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
I hate going first like others to get you warmed up, but I guess we'll just dive right into it. Are you surprised at all at how this whole Derby disqualification and all of its attendant activities has kind of blown up? I mean, I guess I am. Are you surprised at how much attention is devoted in particular to your horse and your rider? And I mean, just the way that.
Absolutely. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm so closely involved, but even with our Triple Crown winners, I don't know if they got that much attention. It's been crazy, and it's been with. I have friends that know nothing about racing that watch one day a year, watch the Kentucky Derby, and they're already waiting to watch the next race. You know, it's definitely drawn a lot of attention, good or bad, to horse racing.
Yeah. Not that my opinion matters, but I didn't feel like the rider did anything wrong for you. But I guess the one criticism I have seen leveled at him is that he should have just stayed inside. Do you feel like what would have happened if he had just waited there? And do you think he did the right thing by coming out when he did, which put him in the spot where he eventually got followed?
Well, Marcus, I went 2 days later and watched NBC, and I actually did a frame by frame. I took photos 18 or 17 frames, you know, every second.
Yeah.
And yeah. If you watch, at no point in time could our rider went inside. And also, I didn't come out. I didn't say for one instant that Lewis was drunk. I simply said, have you ever followed behind a drunk driver and tried to figure out which way to go? And what I meant by that was in those 17 photos, Maximum Security never continued to stay in the same lane one time. So,
right.
To answer your question, Marcus, I called the one the big event, but we were actually bothered before the big event. You can call it whatever you like. I call it a little bit of hurting. But Maximum Security actually comes out and you'll see where our horse's head is always positioned on the outside of Maximum Security. And, of course, I would have loved for Tyler to have been able to stay on the rail, let Maximum Security take out the rest of the field to the 6 or 7 path and shoot to the inside, because today we would be talking about Mark Cassie, the trainer of the Kentucky Derby winner, because that would have been a humongous turnaround. We would have got 3 or 4 lengths at least. And the other thing, everybody would have been running us down. Instead, what happened was he did it, like I said, once. Then he did the big event. And then he slingshots off out of that and then goes down on top of Johnny Velasquez. I don't think the photos lie. Like I said, I charted it. I've got where he was in each deal, and at no point in time could Tyler have made that move. I heard it said a few times that Tyler should have went inside, and, you know, if he had a crystal ball, if he had taken back, if he knew it was going to happen. But that's where I got upset. I was saying nothing. Look, nobody took a bigger beating than we did. But in the end, I was just happy that we had a horse in one piece and we have a shot now to go to the Preakness. So I was happy. I didn't start defending anybody until people started taking shots at Tyler and shots at my horse. You know, when that happens, I'm going to fire back. And I did. And I don't regret anything I said. I did say one word that ended up in, I should have used irritated instead of another word. And of course it was in somebody's column as a, you know, so I do regret that, but I don't regret anything I said besides that. Just, I was irritated.
Worf will never, I mean, he's been on the outside. He was on the outside in his races at Fairgrounds when he ran so well. To me, and obviously I'm not the trainer, he never looked totally relaxed. In fact, he didn't look that relaxed at all being inside and stuck down at the rail the whole trip. Is that something you're going to try to avoid?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that 100%, Marcus. You got to remember one thing. Yeah. Given the one post position, we had to come away from there running. So, Tyler had to step on the gas, and he sent him away from there. You can see him. He sends him like a guy would send a quarter horse. The problem is then he wouldn't shut off. And you're
right.
I couldn't agree more with you. He was not comfortable there. But all that being said, and I wasn't happy going down the backside how he was pulling so hard. At the 5/16th pole, my son Norman put his arm around me and said, "Dad, you're going to win the Kentucky Derby." And we had been through everything, and now you could see our horse was waiting to run. He finally got a clear path, and then within a little bit, we were wiped out of the race. And so much has been said, well, it costs us a length or two lengths. Nobody knows. God knows how, you know, and for anybody to even begin to say is ludicrous in my mind.
One more thing, Mark. I appreciate your time.
No problem. There was a little, I'm passionate about it.
I know. A foot/shoe little hiccup right after the race? Or has that been resolved now?
It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't even actually after the race. Marcus, he was super the next morning. He was good the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it would have been, Tuesday morning. We thought he had a fair amount of heat in his foot and a pulse and was a little tender on it. We pulled his shoe right away. We soaked his foot and put the shoe back on. And he hasn't missed a beat. And it's interesting because Kim Carroll, I'm sure you know who Kim is. That's David Carroll's wife. She was on him yesterday because she's going to Pimlico with him. And I wanted her to get to know him because she hadn't been on him. So she told me after the race or after yesterday's train said he felt like $1 million. I said, well, that's not going to get it. And this morning she was funny after Galpin. She said he feels like $10 million. I said, well, that's better. So he trained extremely well today. He's trained good. That's not an issue.
Which foot was it, Mark?
Right front.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Stephen Wino from the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, Mark, good to talk to you again. This is going to be a smaller field than the Derby, but how do you size this up with Improbable, with Bourbon War, and kind of all the new shooters, the guys, the horses you didn't see in the Derby, and how it stacks up for the Preakness?
You know what? It's an interesting race. We've got some new shooters. Looks like some of those new shooters have some speed. You know, for us, I'm hoping, I think it's going to be a great race. I have the utmost respect for Improbable and Mike Smith and, of course, Bob Baffert. He's my biggest hero. You know, for us, I'm just hoping we get a little better in post. There's no doubt, Marcus pointed it out, that I'm not sure our horse is that fond of being inside. So I would like to try to get a little, it would be nice to get a little farther post outside. But sure enough, you can bet we'll get number one. I said before the Derby, give me anything but number one. it's kind of War of Wills MO. Nothing goes easy for him.
Sure. You obviously had the rough trip with Classic Empire, but Teppan gave you your first Breeders' Cup win a few years ago. What is it about War of Will that leads you to believe he is the horse who could give you your first Classic win?
Well, I think if anybody that's watched him perform, you know, Marcus got to see him a lot of times, got to see him train, but most people didn't, have never seen him train. And we worked in Derby week, and everybody was in awe. And they were like, oh, you know. And I said, now everyone sees what I see. And it's his physique. He's a beautiful, beautiful horse. It's the way he moves. And it's the effortless, how he goes so fast and does it effortlessly. Those are the kind of things as a horse trainer you look for. As great as Teppan was, she didn't do those same things. She would just get it done. She wasn't real fluid on the track. She would trip, nearly fall, give me a heart attack half the time. And but him, he just skips along. He doesn't get tired. He has extremely quick turn of foot when you ask it. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Kentucky Derby. They were flying, especially the first half mile. I think they went somewhere in 46-2. And as Marcus said, you know, he was – if there was an opening, he could have went through it like it was nothing. So everybody else was down running, and he was galloping under a snug hold behind Maximum Security. That's how talented he is, and that's how fast he goes.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Danny Brewer at Horse Racing Scoop. Danny, please go ahead.
Mark, how are you?
Good, Danny.
So they say that they run the Kentucky Derby to decide who's good enough to run in the Preakness. Obviously, you feel like your horse fits the bill for that, right?
I do, of course.
Does he have gears? I mean, you know, you just mentioned about him and everything. Is he a horse with gears? Is that one of the just one of his many?
Very much so. He can, and I said going in, and you didn't get to see it. I saw the same thing with Omaha Beach. I think that's what makes Omaha Beach so talented. And leading up to the Derby, and unfortunately, we all know about what happened at Omaha Beach, but I said to anybody that will listen, the two things that are going to make Omaha Beach and War of Will so tough is their quick turn of foot and the ability. Now, I have to tell you this, and I had never seen it, but Maximum Security has that same type of, he's very quick and does it effortlessly. You know, a lot's been said about Max Security, but a lot of things went wrong, but you can't take away that he's an extremely, extremely talented horse, and Jason Service did an extremely good job of getting ready for the Derby.
When you think back about War of Will's recent past with the big runs at Fairgrounds and everything, is he... You think he's as good as he was then, or is he better than he was then?
Good question. I think he's probably better, given that not a whole lot of things went right for us in the Kentucky Derby, and he got beat four lengths. Speaks volume of how good he is. So So you take all those things, you know, we take away the one post, we take away who knows how much energy he lost fighting Tyler because he wasn't comfortable down inside. And again, one of the reasons why he was so aggressive was because of our post position. We had to ride him. You know, Tyler had to hit the gas early. And then he got some of his momentum taken away going into the half mile pole. He then obviously everybody knows that the big event, he got stopped pretty good. And if you watch, he even gets bothered again a little bit, maybe a 16th of a mile down the stretch. So, and he gets beat four lengths. So that, you know, that speaks volumes. I think too that the Preakness being, you know, speed usually does a little better. It's a little shorter. He should be extremely tough.
Made to order for him, man. I wish you the best of luck and keep him rocking, okay?
Oh, well, thank you, Danny.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to allow anyone else the opportunity to signal for questions.
I heard a question as I was waiting that was asked of Mike about me not claiming foul and why I didn't do it, but I can't remember who asked it. But
we have one more question from Tom Padula at America's Best Racing. Tom, please go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, it's Tom Padula. I actually had asked, I was the one who did ask about that point, and I was going to follow up with you directly. Yeah, I was around you on Sunday, and my question, I guess, really is, with the benefit of hindsight, do you wish that perhaps Tyler had lodged an objection? And I just want to sort of understand, in the context of your discussing why he didn't lodge an objection, it seemed that Sunday you were referring to friendships that exist, you know, within the sport and exist among jockeys.
Were you tying them together, Mark? I'm sorry?
Were you tying those two together? I'm really just trying to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I read some things, and that's not really what I meant. And so I'd like to explain myself a little better there. So what happens and I don't really understand it, and I've had a problem with this for a long time, and that is I don't really think riders should have to make objections. I think I'm not so sure that in a regular race day, there shouldn't be four or five inquiries put up by the stewards. So let's just, I want to use an example, and I'm going to use a couple names. And in no way, shape, or form are these names, I'm not using them in any negative way, but I'm going to use them because they're famous guys. So let's run a race. We finish fourth. And Todd Pletcher wins the race, and Bob Baffert runs second. And my rider, who rides for Bob, and he rides for Todd, and he rides for me, now has to make a decision. He was bothered by the winner, and now he's finished fourth, and he can claim foul and have Todd Pletcher move down to fourth. And the best he's going to do is move up to third. You know, and then tomorrow he's got to go and look at Todd Pletcher and work with him. I think that riders are put in a bad predicament when they're asked to do that. And I think sometimes fouls and inquiries and claim of fouls are not made for that reason. I don't know, and I was in no way saying that Tyler Gaffney didn't claim foul because he's friends with Louis Saez. I can tell you this right now. If my son won the Kentucky Derby and I finished second and his horse bothered me, I'm going to claim foul on him. That's just the way it is. Now, If my son wins the Kentucky Derby and I finish eighth, am I going to claim Fallon? Probably not. And really, I shouldn't ever be put in that predicament. That would be what the stewards are there for. This rule was put in 50 years ago or 75 years ago when they didn't have all the instant replays. Do you see, can you see us having the Super Bowl and the wide receiver goes out and the referee says, hey, to the wide receiver, was that pass interference? And he goes, well, I think it was. I think he hit me early. Let me talk to the safety. Okay. What do you think? Did you think you hit your wide receiver too? Well, no, of course I didn't hit him too soon. That's what we're talking about. It's nonsense. It's the referee. And just like now in football and baseball, we get to watch replays. Those stewards sat up there and got to look at all the replays. And the stewards made the right call. The thing that they did that wasn't right was the inquiry sign should have went up as soon as they went across the finish line. And one other thing I wanted to say, when Tyler Gaffleone came back and him and I were having a discussion about what happened, the objection came up at that point in time saying that Flavian Pratt on the 20 Country House has lodged an objection against the winner. Right there tells you now everything is under review. And would we have claimed foul? I would have, if I got to watch the entire race, I may have claimed foul because I think that we were bothered more than just once, which irritates me a little bit. And that might have irritated me enough to claim foul. But I knew, you know, my job is to get, if Gary Barber is going to get placing and he's going to earn money for it, it's my job, no matter who is in front of me, if that's what needs to be done, I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter whether it's my son, my brother, my wife. I'm going to claim foul if that's because that's my job. My job is to represent my owner. And so, you know, there was a lot written, a lot said, and I'm just happy to be able to kind of tell you. And I do believe if anything comes out of this, our stewards need to be told to stop worrying about objections and concentrate on making inquiries on their own.
That's something good that could come out of this, you hope.
I think so. And then one other thing, while I have everybody, I am not opposed to the 20-horse field. I think the 20-horse field is what makes the Kentucky Derby what it is. I am opposed to the current starting gate. And I think pressure needs to be put on Churchill Downs to make a starting gate that holds 20 horses. Too many of our problems happen early on, and it had nothing to do with this Kentucky Derby. It had about at least, I mean, the horse was on the lead, so the 20 horses, 19 horses had nothing to do with our problems. But every year we have a lot of problems early on in the race, and there's a lot going on, and it's usually in the middle pack, it's because of the way the gates are positioned and because of the big gap in the middle. So I wish Churchill Downs would go ahead and get us a 20 horse gate. They run in Japan. They run in Hong Kong. I had a nice conversation with Johnny Velasquez the other night, and he said, the other thing over there, you're not allowed to change lanes for the first eighth of a mile out of the gate. If we did that, if we put a 20-horse gate in and made everybody stay in their lanes for at least an eighth of a mile, we would have a much safer race, and it would be a better race, and there would be a lot less horses, you know, having excuses.
Mark, if I could ask you just one other question. With the deaths at Santa Anita and now a controversial derby, is this one of the harder times for the sport since you've been involved, and how does the sport work its way through this?
Well, there's no question. There was no question this is the hardest time, but not near as hard if War Will had went down and taken four or five horses with him. I was so thankful after the race that he was fine, that nobody got hurt, that I didn't even care about losing the race. And I think it would have been the worst day in racehorse history. And as you just brought out, we could not afford to have that. Now, there's been a lot said that about rules and regulations. And then when the stewards had the, you know, stood up to the rules, said, you know what, I don't care. It is the Kentucky Derby. Rules are rules. And we're going to, that was big. That was saying, look, we have rules and we're going to stand by them. And the stewards did it. Obviously, it didn't make a lot of people happy because they disqualified the favorite. So that means the most money, the most people had bet on that horse. So that means the most people were going to be upset. But the stewards looked at it, said there was a foul, and there's no question. You talk to the experts, the real experts, and I'm talking about the jockeys and the trainers that have watched thousands and thousands of horses. I haven't heard of one of them except Bob. And Bob is my hero, and I love him dearly, but heroes can be wrong also. And I'm not sure Bob was a good person to ask, since he trains for Mr. West. I don't think that was a fair question to ask Bob. So I'm going to but you know, the Gary Stevens, the Jerry Baileys, the John Velasquez's, you ask those guys. And they're all going to tell you the right decision was made.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay.
Thank you. Our last question is from Louisa Barton at the Host Talk Show on the Sky 97.3. Louisa, please go ahead.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Louisa. How are you, Lou?
Good. Good. We both recovered from the Derby, I hope.
I feel a lot better. I heard Mike earlier on. He didn't sound like he sounds like he had what I had, Derby Day and Oaks Day. Oof, I was sick.
Yes. I think we all left there feeling really, yes, it was quite a weekend. The first thing I wanted to say is I really admire your opinion on the result as far as the jockeys go. You know, I think like you, it's really wrong to put them in that position. And I think the same thing, the stewards are responsible, the three of them, to watch the race and call an inquiry. And I think you really hit the nail right on top of the head with that. And I think as far as the fans go, looking, you know, from the outside looking in, it would have been much better had it been done that way. And it was then clear to the non-horse people who tend to attend the Derby more than any other race to have a better understanding of what's going on. And to see the authority as the one calling the foul, not the jockeys, because that's, I think, what left it questionable to so many people.
I agree.
So I think you really absolutely hit the nail right on top of the head as far as keeping the fans at the race. I'm glad you said that. The question I have is, you didn't breeze Classic Empire between the races when he ran. And you're not doing that with War of Will. Is that because of the close amount of time, the 2 weeks between races, and do you think that's better to give them that time and not breeze?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right, Lou. I did not breeze Classic Empire, and I will not breeze War of Will. And normally, in our normal training regimen, we won't breeze our horse back for a couple weeks after they run. It's just, for me, it's about our fitness level is as high as we can get right now, so we don't have to worry about that. It's now more about getting back good energy and get to feeling good and you know, letting those little aches and pains and sore muscles get to feeling better. And so I didn't do it with Classic Empire. I would be surprised if you'll ever see me do it with a Preakness horse. I just, 2 weeks, I have no problem. I like running back in 2 weeks. We won the Breeders' Cup last year with Shamrock Rose,
back in 2 weeks after winning the Raven run, and you'll see I didn't breeze her either. But I like running back in 2 weeks. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't. I feel like it should be more of just a nice, easy, you know, in between, easy time.
Well, he's a tough horse, and I'm really impressed with him. He's got a little bit of attitude even in his walk, so it's pretty cool. And on the starting gate, it's time for Churchill to do a 20-horse starting gate. Absolutely agree with you there as well. So thank you for all the
good input. Yeah, you're going to see me. You'll see me. I'm going to be pushing very hard for that, so we'll see.
I'd love to see that. I think that would change a lot of things in the race, for sure.
I think you're going to see the riders do the same thing. Like I said, most of the riders I talk to have no problem with the 20 horses running in the Kentucky Derby. They have a problem with the starting gate, though.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Wish you all the best in the Preakness, and perhaps we'll see you there.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. It appears there are no more questions at this time, so I'd like to hand it back to Ms. Alicia Hughes for any additional or closing remarks. Ms. Hughes, please go ahead.
Thank you. Mark, I know you probably set a record this week as far as how many interviews you've done and calls you have taken, so you're a rock star as always. Thank you again so much for coming on the call today.
Thanks for having me, and hopefully we're going to have a great Preakness. We'll see you there.
See you there. I'll see you in a few days, Mark. You take care.
Okay, bye.
And that will do it for this marathon edition today of the NTRA National Media Teleconference. An audio file of this call will be up later today on NTRA.com, and a transcript will be available there tomorrow. Once again, I'd like to thank our guests for coming on today, Mark Hennig, Mike Smith, and Mark Cassie. Thank you to all of you for calling in and joining us in your participation. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to preview the Belmont Stakes. And with that, now back to our operator.
Thank you. Thank you all for your participation. This marks the end of today's conference. We appreciate your participation, and you may now disconnect.